Hi, I'm just responding to Sassy Cat about what do we do to fill our hours. I haven't really listened to it, but just listening to someone else's February, I will listen to it. I just haven't got round to listening to everything yet. She gave us an alternative if we didn't watch a lot of movies. Well, I have talked about quite a few, but I don't watch that many. And one thing I do, I listen to audiobooks. I do watch the TV sometimes with my husband, really. I started watching a few reality shows, which I'll never have put my name to in the past, but some of them are quite entertaining in a stupid sort of way. never watched Big Brother or anything like that. But I do listen to radio drama sometimes, and I just wanted to talk about one of the things I've been listening to recently, actually two of them. Excuse me. One is last week's and this week's on Radio 4, BBC Radio 4 in the UK, 15-minute drama. It's called Halfway Here. I can't remember who it's by. It's Catherine someone. I don't know if it's a book that's been dramatised, because they do that sometimes. I did look on Google, but all I could find, because it's a recent thing, was the dramatisation. I only looked... What are you doing, you stupid dog? He slipped. Get off! He sits on the back of the sofa, and I've got long hair, and I've got it tied back in a ponytail, and he sits on it, and it really hurts. Anyway, it's called Halfway Here. The first five episodes, it's on twice a day. It's the one episode is on in the morning, and then it's repeated at 7:45 p.m. UK time. What time are we on now? We're on Greenwich Mean Time now, I think, till next month. Anyway, GMT. I think that's what we're on. So it's on at 7:45 p.m. I think it's at 10:45 a.m. I'm not sure, because I listen to it on the iPlayer radio. You know, I search for it. And at the end of the first week, there's an omnibus version where they play it all in one go. So I didn't listen to it as it was going on. It was as it was unfolding. There's another programme on a Sunday evening called Pick of the Week, where they have different presenters each week. I think they've got like a certain amount, and they just keep going through them, and they invite listeners to write in or email in or text or whatever to suggest to playing. They play clips from the from various programs on the radio. It's all radio from the previous week. It's all BBC. And so this was one of the ones someone asked for, I think. And so they played this clip, and the story goes, it's about how there's a family, there's 15-year-old twins, a girl and a boy, a mother and father. And it's billed as the story of how a family falls apart when, something big happens. And the something big is the 15-year-old girl gets knocked down on her way home from school. And there's a load of repercussions. And it really affected me, like Paul was saying about the Green Mile, which affected me too. This has really affected me. Seven episodes have gone now, because I listened to the first five all in one go, because I just heard about it on Sunday. And then I listened to it yesterday on the iPlayer radio. I always get that wrong. iPlayer radio. And today I listened to it on there as well. And there's another three episodes to go. I don't really want to give too much away, and I don't know how it's going to end, but basically the boy and the girl twins had this telepathic connection. It might be a bit far-fetched in that way, but it's a very, very, very touching and moving and thought-provoking and a programme that makes you do a bit of soul-searching. Because the girl, we still don't know if she tried to kill herself or whether it was an accident, because she was upset when it happened. And it gradually unravels why she was upset, and she's pregnant. And they're at the moment trying to keep the baby alive. Well, the baby's alive and they're trying to keep the baby alive because they think she's dead in a coma. But the son doesn't think she is because he can still communicate with her. but he doesn't tell his family that because they wouldn't believe it. But the parents split up, and the mother can't accept that her daughter's gone, and they're just keeping her alive so she can have the baby. And you think, what would you do? What would you do if it, God forbid, that happened to your child? Sorry about this. And it's very, very well done, I think, and it's so poignant. There's something so sad about it, but I'm hoping it's going to have a decent ending. I really don't know. And the music, they've got this little bit of music that they just keeps playing over again, and you get it in your head. It's kind of very atmospheric. I would recommend it. It's a good, a very good drama. You know, it's been well produced, I think. And it's just so, I don't know, it's really affected me. It's really made me think. And I keep thinking about it. I keep thinking, you know, how awful it must be for people who have a family member in a coma, and they don't know what the outcome's going to be, and they don't know whether they're doing the right thing in switching it off. And, you know, can you make a mistake? And maybe they weren't gone as you thought they were. And the parents react totally differently to the situation. The father doesn't go and see her anymore because he can't stand it. He's a staff nurse in the hospital. Sorry. And he goes to see, he doesn't go to see her anymore because he thinks they've been told, go and lay down, Niall, go and lay down. There's a good boy. He's been told that, well, the both parents and the brother have been told that she's clinically dead and they're only keeping her alive for the baby because the baby's about 20 weeks or something like that. And she's had scans and they found out it's a daughter. And the mother really wants the baby to survive. And she can't quite believe that she doesn't believe that her daughter's dead. And she went to all these mediums and she spent thousands of pounds on her husband's credit card. He's moved out because he can't stand it. The son's stuck somewhere in the middle. Meanwhile, they get to find out how it all happened in the first place. And the parents react so differently to the situation because they kept seeing this man hanging around looking up at the daughter's bedroom window, and the mother thought it was a guardian angel. She was convinced it was a ghost, and the father went outside to try and question him because he thought he might be the father, and he said he looked like a paedophile and he chased him and the bloke got away. But then he comes back, then the mother sees him again another day and she goes down, and it turns out that he was the driver of the van, and he said he feels terrible, he can't sleep. And then you think of that side of the story, how awful for a driver to knock someone down like that. And he said he wanted the police to arrest him, but they couldn't because they said there was no evidence, because that's eyewitnesses said that she did it purposely, that she saw the van and she stepped out, but her parents don't believe it, of course. And she invites him in. She said, would you like to come and see her? So every Friday he comes and says, he's a Christian, and he says prayers with her and he brings her flowers. And one day the parents have had a meeting at the hospital, and they're walking down the corridor together, and they see him coming with a bunch of flowers. And the mother says, oh, hello. And he says, who's this? So she tells him, and he goes absolutely berserk. He said, why are you letting him in for? And he grabs the flowers off him. He says, don't ever come near my daughter again. You killed our daughter. You killed her. And he stamps on the flowers. And, he said he's really sorry. He's so sorry. And he goes to hit him and everything. So, you know, that's how they're reacting totally differently. And you do hear this when families have had a tragedy like that. You often hear, like at the time, they talk about the parents, and then if they come back, if they do some kind of campaign to put a crossing where their child got knocked down or whatever, or a campaign against knives if their child got, or their young son or daughter, teenager or what young person got stabbed. You'll often find they come and they speak to the mother and father and they're not a couple anymore. I don't know how many times I've heard that. And you can see how something like this happening would put a terrible strain on a relationship. And the poor boy, I feel so sorry for him. He's like swimming around in the middle, not knowing what day of the week it is, because his parents have gone completely, you know, they've kind of gone AWOL. The mother's gone crackers. She's spent like thousands of pounds on these mediums and she's created a nursery in their spare bedroom and spent loads of money on cots and mobiles and things like that for this baby that might not even survive. And the father doesn't want anything to do with it, and he's moved out, or she kicked him out, and he went to stay with someone else that works at the hospital whose daughter is in the same year as the twins, and they've known them, you know, all their lives. And so he ends up sleeping with her, even though he's not, you know, he just does it because he's there. And, you know, he goes down the pub every day. And I think that's how people act. You know, these things hit people completely differently. He's given up hope. The mother's clinging on to false hope. The son is, you know, getting messed up between the pair of them. And they're not really just giving him a lot of attention or focusing on him. But yeah, it's kind of riveting. And I don't know how, I can't imagine, I've got three more episodes to listen to. I can't imagine how it's going to end. Sorry, the other one, again, I heard it on Pick of the Week. It was the Book of the Week on Radio 4, which I think is on quite late at night. And this one was called City of Thorns. And it's not fiction, it's based on real research. And it's about this bloke who spent a few years in Kenya in this huge refugee camp. I can't remember what it's called now, but it started off like a room for 90,000 people, and there's ended up like, I think they said it's been open for 25 years. And it's now about 500,000 strong, and people, once they get there, they can't seem to get out. You know, like they promised them a load of asylum in other countries and stuff like that, but and it's a haven for people that belong to like a group like IS, but they picked certain people and they told their story, and their stories, and it was really quite sad. You know, one boy, he was about 15, he just got married, and he got taken away, he got kidnapped by the IS equivalent, and he had to patrol the town and you know, if anyone was out in the shops when they weren't meant to be, they would get beaten, and you know, because they had sticks and stuff. And this one day he saw the person that was, there was three people that got caught. He didn't have to do the beating, but one of his like co-workers did, and it was his wife, her sister, and a male relative. So in the end he when they have a couple of days off, he goes back to his family and he says he's going to escape to this camp because he's heard that it's good. And I think, I can't remember where they were, Somalia, I suppose, I'm not really sure, but he gets to Kenya, and then he sends for his wife and he says it's really good there, and it's not, it's crap. And then they end up having kids and they've got no food. And at the end, after he's written the book, the author invites them on separate occasions, all the people that whose stories have been featured, he invites them for a meal, and at this buffet style place, and he talks to them. Obviously it's been abridged because it had to fit into like just over an hour, because it's I think it was only on for a week. He invites them to this meal separately. Two of them went together because they were like friends, and then they read what he's written about them to make sure that they've got the facts right and everything, and they approve of it. But some of them refused to eat any of the food while they were there because they said their family hadn't eaten today, so how can they eat? And one bloke, I think he was the last one they interviewed, they said he went walking off up the road with a chicken leg in each hand, and that's going to feed his family. And it was very sad because There was a girl. She was a Muslim, and they married her off. And no, she had a child. I can't remember who she had it with. But then she got married, and she had another child. And for some reason, it was a daughter. And he took her away, and I think they got their marriage annulled or something like that because she didn't want to be with him. And she met someone who was a Christian. He was was he Somali? I can't remember. But anyway, they got together, but her family, even like her female relatives, they came around, they tried to, they had a baby together. They tried to, tried to grab her daughter that she'd already got, and they were going to kill the baby that they'd had, so they had to be given special protection and moved somewhere else. And they were supposed to be moved out of the country, but they were apparently that as of last year they were still there. And they had more children, but they were meant to be going. I think they were meant to be going to America. But one of the things that it said at the end, which was really quite sad, was when the authorities realised that a lot of these young boys, they say, well, they've got nothing to eat. They're not allowed to work because they're in Kenya, so they have to do, like, really menial jobs. Like, they can't get any good jobs. They have to do these menial tasks, like collecting wood, getting water for people in the camp, cleaning people's shoes and stuff like that. And it doesn't give them enough money to support their family properly. And they do get food from, I think it's the UN, but they have to try and supplement it because it's only things like rice and beans and it's not enough. So they when they were interviewed, they said the people said to them, well, why don't you join this militia thing like the IS? Because, you know, it's a job and you get good money for it. And they said, no, they would rather starve than do that. And then because the authorities realised that none of them want to do it because they will probably be set against their own relatives and families, they don't think they're a threat because they're not going to join IS and be a force to reckon with. So they don't think it's urgent to get them moved out and do anything with them. So they just think it's okay for them to languish in this camp indefinitely. So that was actually it was interesting to hear about their lives, but it was actually quite a sad ending. I thought it was very sad. Anyway, I think I've gone on too long, so I will clear off now. Oh, what did I do that for? I keep thinking I'm on WhatsApp. Low power mode. Close. Time remaining 42 minutes and 5 seconds.